Hey there, IndyCar fans. This is Nathan, your Motorsports Insider with the Indianapolis Star, here for this week's edition of IndyCar Weekly. We'll be breaking down last month's Indianapolis 500. Seems like it's been quite a long time, but just a week and a half ago, along with previewing this weekend's doubleheader at Detroit on Belle Isle. Of course, joining me, co-host as always, we've got Meyer Shank Racing's Jack Harvey with us today. We're talking about heading up tomorrow, Thursday morning, both of us heading up to Detroit. It'll probably be today, maybe by the time you're reading this or listening to this. But a busy weekend in store and a really busy one to recap for the 500. So we will get into it. First off, Jack, how did you enjoy a little bit of a weekend off here following the 500 that I know we don't traditionally get with how the a normal 17 race schedule pans out with the 500 in Detroit normally?
It was super nice, mate, honestly, to not have to go straight from the 500 to Detroit. I always thought that's such a tough ask, not necessarily just on the drivers, but on everybody. So I think for us all to have that just that weekend off, you know, reset, recoup, you know, re-energize, was really worth it. My manager was actually racing at Road America, so I actually drove up to go and try and support him and whatnot, and he was racing at the June Sprints in a Formula Ford. I actually finished third on Sunday, so my weekend off was still at a racetrack, but honestly, it was just nice to have just a little bit of a breather, you know, be able to try and, you know, catch our breath, try and understand what's, you know, been going really well, what's been going not so well, and try and put solutions in place for all the above.
I always found it so odd. I know this is just my second year covering IndyCar, but covering the series as a fan, I always understood in some way why the series and other promoters would want to feed off of that energy and excitement that the 500 brings. You know, you're capturing millions upon millions of people watching that race. For a lot of them, the 500 will be the only race they'll watch that year. And so you're hoping, I know in some ways to, you know, transfer that, you know, potential just one-time fan to, sure, to tune into the next race on the schedule. So in some ways, I know it makes sense to have a race that following weekend. And in years past, it's actually been the doubleheader in Detroit, followed then again by the oval race at Texas, which I know just has got to have been a really grueling schedule, both for drivers and for team members, you know, members of the media, officials in the series. So I, for one, will say I think it was a nice way to be able to take a little bit of a breath and also maybe in some way let this year's, you know, the results and, of course, the eventual winner of the Indy 500 get a little bit of time in the sun and give us a chance to reflect on what happened in that race rather than having to, you know, a couple days later, all of a sudden, you know, shift our minds and focuses forward toward another race. And I know for Meyer Shank Racing, obviously the results of the 500 were really important. We saw, as I assume all you listeners probably already know, we saw Jack's teammate Elio Castroneves pick up his fourth Indy 500, putting him in a class of three other drivers who have won that race four times with AJ Foyt, Rick Mears, and Al Unser Sr. It was a really emotional, exciting day, as it always is whenever Elio wins that race, as he did three times prior with Team Penske. But there's a lot of history both in his own achievement and this team. Jack, I guess my first question would be, what has this last week and a half, I know you said you've been away a little bit, but just the general vibe and feedback that you've gotten from either the folks who were directly part of that entry or folks that were just around it in all of those preparation meetings leading up to the May 30th 500. What do you feel like Elio's win has done for this team?
I think Elio's win has shown, you know, what we've all believed in from the get-go, that the potential of the team is that you can win races. Certainly didn't put all our eggs in Michael's basket just to be one of the drivers on the field. We do it because we believe in the team, in the group of people, and that combination has winning potential. So obviously it was a mixed day. We didn't have a great day on the 60 car. We made progress at the start. We had a really bad pit stop. The flip side of that, Elio had a very smooth day, and grabbed, his fourth. So, it's hard because I know so many of those guys and I love so many of the team and the whole team that you want to celebrate. But, let's not kid ourselves that when your teammate wins, it's a little bit of a sting, especially when it's the first win for the team, and all them things. So, I chatted to everybody at different times last week because for me, it was a little bit of a roller coaster of emotions. A lot of great stuff, a lot of frustration. And then chatted to everybody this week and it was just a case of it's a new week, it's time to get going. But, for the team itself, it's wonderful. Those guys work so hard, have worked so hard the off-season. We really put a lot of emphasis on certain things regarding the speedway. And, they paid dividends. You can't say that they haven't because they did. I would obviously wish it had been on the 60. And looking back across the month, we had an engine blow up on day one. We had a tyre issue in qualifying, bad pit stop in the race. Clearly it just wasn't going to be our month. But seeing Elio be able to get his fourth, I've actually, since I've been at the 500, I've seen him, finish second at least once. And he's such a nice guy. He has a real genuineness about him. He's charismatic. He's a gentleman. And I think we all get excited, kind of, when you see him Spider-Man, and climb the fence. it's hard not to. And, for as many positive feelings that were there, obviously you look over in that moment with probably a little jealousy, a bit of envy, and go, oh, God, I wish that was me doing that. But the win for the team is massive. The thing that's tough about this week, obviously, is enjoy it last week for all the reasons that you said, for everyone to have their moment in the sun. That being said, come Monday, it's time to get ready again for Detroit. So hopefully, as I said to the team, I hope they partied really well last week. And I hope they're 100% focused and ready to have a good weekend this weekend. So, it's been probably how you imagine it being.
Yeah, I think the most, maybe the most interesting, or at least it's something that I didn't know that I learned in the press conference regarding Meyer Shank Racing and the crew on Elio's car going into that race. When we came away from the press conference with Mike Shank and Jim Meyer on Sunday evening, I don't remember which one of them told us this little tidbit of information, but they said that they only had two full-time members of the crew that were supremely dedicated to Elio's car. Only two of those guys were full-time. And everyone else was on either a one race deal or doing this part-time while also, paying attention to the sports car program that they have in DPI and IMSA, with Acura. And I just thought it was really neat to hear. We've heard you and Mike talk, both this season and even in seasons past, that this, you wanted to make sure that folks truly understood that this wasn't, I think the quote you guys have used a lot was, it's not the little team that could, and now it's this team that actually has achieved something and achieved something that, only one team can come away victorious from this race every year. It's just the first time in 10 years that a partial season driver has won this race. As you mentioned, it's this team's first win, and to come on such a big stage, in part for you guys, that it both shows, what Meyer Shank Racing can achieve and maybe helps you guys some more sponsors and more visibility that you certainly could argue that you guys had already deserved. Going into Detroit now, I know Elio won't be, you know, in the race car. You know, there's been a lot of talk, you know, whether he would, you know, join the series full time for the rest of the year. He's still locked into his five races with you guys at, I think, Nashville, IMS, Portland, Laguna Seca, and Long Beach. So for the folks that are going to be around for Detroit, on your car and, you know, focusing on trying to, you know, make some moves in this really tight points battle. I know, I think you're 13th right now, but, someone like Colton Herta in seventh is only like 26 points or 33 points. Sorry, my math, away when we've got two races up for grabs now, even if it wasn't a, you know, the 500 that you guys were hoping for, what do you feel like you guys could take away from this month of May at large and put forward into this three races in 8 days that we have before us starting this weekend?
I think it's a really interesting question. I guess it depends on what kind of perspective you're looking at it. I mean, from a global perspective, we were really competitive in the road course, and then the team won the Indy 500. So like you said, you know, a ton of exposure, a ton of eyeballs on the team. Hopefully Jim and Michael are able to turn that, you know, hopefully into finding some more sponsors, just so then hopefully we can go back to the Indy 500 next year and continue to be competitive. Certainly I noticed a bump in my following, you know, on Instagram and on Twitter, which was nice. You know, people keep asking me, like, how does the team winning the 500, you know, impact you in a positive way and things like that. And I mean, honestly, my hope is that the team are able to turn it into maybe a slightly more funding for the team. I never even spoke to Michael and Jim about Elio racing in Detroit. If they did, then it would have been great. If not, then it's way out of my control. You know, they never asked, but I know that obviously wasn't the plan in the first place. I thought everybody on Elio's car, albeit part-time, I don't think there was anyone there without having not had some IndyCar experience. But honestly, you just got to say congrats to those guys, because throughout all the week, you know, they were working on pit stops because some of them had been, you know, not too awesome. And then when it mattered, they got it together and they had a really smooth day in pit lane. And all you can do is congratulate them for that. I think, you know, if I look at the month of May and what it means to the 60 car, it's probably another month of what if, you know, what could have been. But I think the big ticket item, and I think you see this up and down pit lane, you know, not just with me, but with, you know, all teams, all drivers at some point, it's so competitive this year that winning the race is a perfect day, and it's, you know, it's perfect from the drivers, you know, the guys on strategy and on the timing stand, and it's also the guys in pit lane doing the pit stops. So if you don't have all those ducks aligned, it's probably not going to happen for you. And man, we were so close in both of those weekends, maybe not winning the 500 because of where we qualified, but certainly, you know, could have had a top 10, I think, you know, pretty comfortably. It's around where we were before we had our first issue. And the big takeaway is execution. You know, on the 60 car, we don't have to have the very fastest stop of the race, but we do need to have the best average. And I can tell you that the first two stops at the 500 were excellent. And the one after our mishap was also very, very good. But that one mishap, you know, turns your day, you know, pretty on its head and upside down. So I think it's just, you know, consistency, execution. But one of the primary takeaways is just the fact that we did show a ton of speed. We were competitive again. And we just want to keep that momentum rolling for as long as we can.
Mm-hmm. How much does an anomaly like this race being the fastest one in history, only having two cautions, none of those really having anything to do in particular with action going on track? You know, we saw Stefan Wilson spin in the pits right around 30 laps into the race, and Graham Rahal had a rear tire come off due to leaving the pits early, and that brought out a short caution there at all. But beyond that, the race was green the entire way. When you're trying to, figure out a strategy, as you mentioned, when you start a little bit farther back in the race than you would hope, and you only have a couple caution periods to work with to try and position yourself, so I imagine that's probably not something that you would assume would happen in a race like the 500. How much did just the fairly flawless execution, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, of the rest of the field in terms of accidents and cautions hurt your guys' chances at being able to make some moves and take advantage of some of those situations to move up the field ultimately?
I mean, it hurts probably quite a lot because you haven't really got too much chance to recover if something goes bad. I thought, easy to say, up to us having an issue, our race was playing out very well. Felt like we had a really good start. The car felt great. We were moving forward. Started 20th. I think we got up to as high as 9th. I think we pit from 10th. Things were looking very good. And then you have that pit stop. And without another yellow to kind of bunch everybody back up and, give other people the opportunity to, maybe not have a great stop or, takes away the opportunity of maybe trying to have a great start, something like that. I mean, it makes it hard, and certainly I feel like at the minute when we need a yellow, it doesn't come. And when we don't need one, obviously you get it. But the reality is probably all drivers feel that, at some point. And I think you may have mentioned it. You pretty much leave the 500 with one driver that's happy, one team that's happy. The yellows that were happening, a little unusual. I don't think it's the first time you've seen someone have an issue getting into pit lane, for sure. And like I tried to say to the guys like last week, no one is immune, from a bad pit stop. We personally are going to probably have more at some point in this season. You're going to have yellows that fall for you, fall against you. The thing that I just urge the team to get away from is thinking that we are lucky or unlucky. Right now, we are going to get the results that we create. And if it's on the negative side of that, then we just have to limit that damage. And I think that, whoever wins the championship this year, obviously will be the most consistent driver, but also be the one who normally makes the best of a bad weekend. And probably that's what I feel like we as a team need to try and do a little bit more. And obviously capitalize on when it's good. But if the race goes full green, especially the 500, when the racing is so close at the minute, puts a huge amount of pressure on everybody in pit lane, from the driver getting into the box at a good speed, stopping on the marks well, getting out well, changing the tires well, the fueler, getting in well. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be good to have that level of stop. So on the whole, the 60 car doesn't have a problem in pit lane. We've had two bad stops at probably the two most important times, but the guys do really, really well. So actually, my conversation with them has just been, take a deep breath. Let's try and find a little consistency. But you don't need something radical to change because we're not doing anything obviously wrong. We just need to limit the damage of a bad one.
You mentioned how close this field is. We continued, of course, the trend of drivers having or adding a new 2021 race winner into the fold. We've now got six race winners from six countries and coming from five teams. So it's just continues to prove how incredibly close and how incredibly competitive this IndyCar season is as we come into Detroit. It will be really interesting to see if that trend continues even more. Obviously, we haven't seen a win yet from Team Penske, so that's certainly a possibility as they come into this race that those guys both know extremely well outside of Scott McLaughlin, I guess, and also probably have a little bit of an incentive to win given the fact that it's promoted by Penske Corp, folks like Bud Denker and the like. So we'll see how that pans out. Before we get to Detroit, one other thing I wanted to touch on, obviously this race marked the large scale return of fans to IndyCar races. You guys had 135,000 on hand. It was also a race that lots of folks watched on TV. It was the best TV rating in 5 years since the 100th running back in 2016. And it wasn't really even too far off that mark set that year before you hopped into the race. I know it's not the 300,000 or the 350,000 even that you guys would love to have there at IMS. But what sort of a difference, even when you're in the car and you're going 220 around the track, I know you probably can't necessarily hear the crowd as the race is going on, but what sort of a different vibe and atmosphere did that number of fans at a racetrack as big as and as important like IMS, what did that do, you feel like, for this year's 500 on race day?
It was awesome. It was so awesome having people back. I think the time we really noticed it was, you know, qualifying weekend, carb day. Even though it was drizzly carb day, people still were there. And then honestly, just walking out again, you know, for the driver introductions on race day and just seeing that many people, I feel like there may have been more than 135 because I thought the grandstands looked pretty full. But honestly, like that's awesome to me. You know, that the energy that's there on race day, without doubt, is second to none. It's so inspiring. It's so just awesome. And that's what makes it the greatest spectacle in racing. And I think, speaking on behalf of all my colleagues at this point, we don't want to do a major race in front of the other 32 drivers. We want to do it in front of, you know, this time 135,000, hopefully next year back to capacity, because you want to share that result with people. I think, you know, looking at, you know, for example, Elio, if he'd have won last year, him climbing the fence, I mean, he might as well have just climbed on the, you know, pit stand. You know, that's where everybody was. You know, so I feel like it somehow seemed really fitting as well that he was the driver, you know, that won as we, you know, re-welcomed fans, obviously, back to IMS. It's great, mate. I mean, you know, last year's 500 felt super weird. You know, it felt like we were going out for, you know, a practice session, but it happened to be the Indy 500. This year, come race day, there was definitely race day shift again. And it's just been, it was so awesome. You know, and I think this weekend as well, going to Detroit, as they've opened up the paddock again, I literally just got an email that said Mid-Ohio were opening up the paddock again. So hopefully some of these things that have, you know, for the last year or so have stopped being normal, become back to our old normal, you know, and be able to interact with people, see people, you know, and try and share this experience the best we can, you know, because without fans, you don't have a sport. And, you know, certainly we want to interact with them as much as we can.
I will admit, too, you mentioned that the grandstands certainly looked like they were more than 135,000. And it was surprising to me, too, as someone who's now both been there as a member of the media and someone who's also sat in the grandstands and watched this race several times as a kid growing up in Noblesville. The one thing I'll say that I think a lot of us maybe kind of forgot that was actually a factor is that it was 135 out of the, what I think the grandstands at IMS hold roughly 235,000. So that's already, it's not necessarily that 40% mark that I know we've been talking about a lot, but that 40% is technically out of, what is it, like 350,000, I think, that IMS holds. So you're already above 50% there. And I will say, as someone who sat in the grandstands, those seats, when they're completely full, are pretty darn narrow. You're pretty much sitting shoulder to shoulder with folks. You got your cooler underneath your feet. You don't really have any place to put your feet because someone sitting right next to you is probably doing the same thing. You got people sitting in front and back of you. So my best guess to that, after seeing what the stands look like, is that, you know, maybe folks had a little bit more of a chance to spread out. And I think, you know, you could have those grandstands at 50 to 60, 65% full. And it probably in lots of places look fairly robust. I didn't get a chance to look and see what things look like, say, in the short shoots, which are obviously typically less desirable places for fans to be. So maybe those were a little bit less full, and that might be kind of where things eventually balanced out. You know, if there were in fact more than 135, I imagine we probably won't ever hear that, but in all, it was just really nice to see that place looking a lot closer to normal. As you said, Detroit has the paddock open this weekend. I believe they will essentially have what would be close to a full crowd. They open the grandstands up wide open, and I think they're selling a number of general admission tickets that's maybe just slightly less than normal, as they've said, to help still keep things safe, but in essence, have the chance to have what would be close to a sellout crowd. And and both the paddocks at Road America and Mid-Ohio will be open. So I think we're probably getting towards a point where things are going to feel fairly normal. We won't have to wear masks in the paddock at Detroit this weekend. I did see and reported earlier today on Wednesday, which is a nice bit of relief. So I think though the 500 didn't have, you know, as many people as we might have wished it would have been able to, certainly a nice dose of normalcy and maybe a good way to bridge getting into the heat of this summer where we have races all around the Midwest. So as we get to Detroit, I know despite you having raced in this series now since 2017, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is still a brand new track for you now, isn't it?
It is, mate. Yeah. It's wild.
So what do you, I mean, do you essentially, you know, when you have a new street course, it's not a place where you're able to, you know, do obviously any sort of off-season testing. Do you just have to rely that much more on your performances at a place like, say, St. Pete, that's a street course, or somewhere like Sebring, if you guys have tested there recently, that's a little bit bumpier, to try and get some sort of a baseline when you only have a 75 minute practice on Friday to get things set up for qualifying and races on Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, man. I mean, definitely makes it harder this weekend. And that being said, nobody raced there last year, so perhaps it's kind of out of everybody's mind a little bit more. Obviously, St. Pete's probably one of the tracks in North America that I have driven the most. You know, and gone pretty well at. I feel like I've gone well at, you know, street circuits just in general. I think Detroit, the first thing you hear about is how bumpy the track is. You know, certainly catch that comment all the time by a lot of people. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of my normal prep, I've probably done a little bit more, or probably done a lot more for this weekend in terms of video analysis, data analysis, you know, rewatching a lot of the races back, you know, perhaps more than I normally would do. But we want to go and have a good weekend. And, you know, I don't, just because it's my first time there, I don't see any reason why we can't push for that. And yeah, mate, I mean, obviously a lot of things to learn, no doubt, but you know, I'm confident that the pace that we've shown this year in general, at St. Pete, a variety of tracks, you know, from road courses to ovals, that, you know, we can go and be competitive this weekend in Detroit, even as a rookie there for the first time. So I think there's a lot of really good things, and I think the team's in a good place at the minute. I feel in a good place at the minute. We just want to keep you know, keep momentum with us as much as we can, and, you know, honestly, just keep pushing on. But definitely excited to be finally driving at you know, the Belle Isle Grand Prix. So just want to get started now, mate, honestly.
Looking over, you know, your history in IndyCar, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, beyond Nashville, it's obviously a new race for everyone this year. It looks like, what is it, maybe other than Toronto, if we do race it, Toronto down the line, that this would maybe be the last race that you haven't yet run at, as far as tracks that likely would be on the calendar going into, you know, say 2022 and beyond.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously no one's been to Nashville. So, I mean, that's kind of a game changer. Everywhere else I have been to, I was excited to try and get to Detroit last year and, you know, disappointed when I saw it come off the calendar. But yes, I think that's right.
We've heard a handful of drivers kind of describe what the physical realities of having a street race and having it be a doubleheader. I mean, I know that Detroit being a doubleheader is something that's been fairly stationary on the schedule, I think, since 2013 minus last year, as you said, because of the pandemic. So without having gone through this race yet, I know we've heard a lot of drivers talk about just how incredibly tough, given the aero screen, this race earlier this spring in late April at St. Pete was, just given the heat and the humidity there. When we have a doubleheader in Detroit, I haven't looked at exactly what the weather is going to be like, but you have to imagine, you know, maybe somewhere at least one race around the 80s or so, and you have the air screen that I know is still a little bit of a work in progress as far as airflow is concerned. Is this a weekend that you have marked as being likely one of, if not the most physically difficult on the calendar as far as this year is concerned?
I would say, I think any track that is as bumpy as Detroit is, I think there's some really high commitment corners like turn one, turn two, even coming onto the back straight. Just the bumpiness of it, you know, having to really hang on to the wheel, you know, et cetera, kind of naturally make those races a little more intense. Make them physically harder. And then obviously it's going to be a little warmer there than I think it has been in the past. I think IndyCar doing a good job at the minute with trying to, you know, figure out what are efficient ways of trying to cool, you know, the cockpits and the cars and things like that. So, at this point, mate, honestly, just kind of hopeful that IndyCar can think of keep thinking of good solutions for that, that scenario. And it's going to be hot, it's going to be physical, but hopefully, you know, all the prep that I've done in the gym, you know, with my trainers there and whatnot, is going to give us good performance on Sunday. So, definitely a tough one. Probably not as hard. Well, I mean, we'll wait and see. I don't want to say probably not as hard as somewhere else because I haven't been to Detroit yet. It might be the hardest one of the year. We'll have to just wait and see, you know, play it by ear and hopefully be in good shape by the end of race one because we've got two races.
It's a good point. I'll take just another look at where the series stands as a whole entering this weekend. We've got Alex Plow leading the championship after finishing second to Elio in the 500, followed 26 or 36 points back by Scott Dixon. Pato O'Ward 1 point behind Dixon with Simon Pagenaud, Rinus VK, Joseph Newgarden, and Colton Herta rounding out the top seven. But that group there, I'd say probably the top four is fairly close together. Will be really interesting to see, I think, from my standpoint, how Alex can continue to perform with the consistency that he's shown thus far. He had a 17th place at St. Pete that was a little bit of a head scratcher following his first victory in IndyCar in the season opener at Barber, but otherwise has racked up four top four finishes. This has led at least one lap in every single race and has finished on the podium both of the races at IMS. I don't know necessarily how well you know Alex, but just from a member of the paddock at large, what has maybe stood out to you about someone like him having at least a fairly decent gap on the rest of the field thus far in the points race, six races in?
He's a fantastic driver. No one would ever doubt that. He got off to the season in a perfect way. And you know, he's been very consistent. You know, he's a great driver and a great team. And so far, I think within the points wise being the way it is, you know, having a great result there. If you can't win the race, at least you want to have a fantastic result, because it's, you know, it's worth so much to the championship. And I mean, I guess when Chip Ganassi Racing were looking for a driver this year, they thought he was a good candidate for that slot. And, you know, in truth, he's delivering, you know, for them, that they should feel well about their selection there with Alex. He's a very nice guy. He's incredibly humble. He works really hard, you know, and certainly deserves a lot of the success that, you know, he's getting right now. And yeah, I mean, I think this will probably be his first time going to Detroit as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're the guys around him, you're hoping that you have a good weekend just to, you know, close the gap to him some, probably. But I think the field has got so many great drivers in there. You know, practice one might be difficult, but I think come you know, quali one, race one, still might be. But I mean, I think the Sunday sessions will be you know, all pretty close again. So he's in a great job, mate. You know, there's no doubt about that at all.
It's a really interesting point. I'd forgotten, you know, of course, that this is going to be his debut at Detroit, as well as a guy like Pato O'Ward, who's in third, and I think Rinus VK, who's in fifth. All three of those guys came into last year either as rookies or as, you know, their first season, full season in IndyCar. Actually, I think Pato did race there in what would be considered his rookie year in 2019 with Carlin. But beside the point, still, as you mentioned, a pretty new weekend for everyone, with the addition of the Aero Screen, having not raced there last year. But will be really interesting to see how, as we move on later into the year, guys like, you know, young guys like Rinus, Pato and Alex handle championship contenders like Joseph and Scott and Simon, who are all fairly close to them in that top five, top six area. We'll go to a couple questions here that we have from folks on Twitter before we wrap things up today. Question here from Jason Wade, which I thought was really important and something I've actually been asking some drivers around the series this week as we head to Detroit. He says, whose career IndyCar only would you rather have, Jack? Either Elio's with 4 Indy 500 wins and no championships, or Scott Dixon's with 6 championships, 1 Indy 500, and being second all time in wins?
It's a tough one. It's a really difficult one to answer, mate. Honestly, I think that if I was answering it with my heart, I know how significant the Indy 500 is, you know, to Indiana's community, you know, especially living here. I feel like the status and the gravitas that goes along with the 500, I would rather have the 4 Indy 500 rings. I feel like winning 6 championships is in a lot of ways harder to do, because I mean, that's, it's almost, it's crazy to me how good Scott Dixon is. You know, he and his team, you know, to be that good across that many races for that many years. You know, I definitely feel like there's a sense of the speedway that when it picks you, that you know it's your year, and that's great. And I would love to have an Indy 500 ring. I would say probably the slightly harder achievement would be winning 6 series championships, but I think I'd take the 4 Indy 500 rings instead.
That's kind of the gist, and now I haven't asked everyone in the paddock. I hope to kind of get everyone's input on that, because I think it's really interesting. I generally speaking, I think the drivers that I've spoken with so far have, I think, generally agreed with you that there's certainly an added difficulty, and that maybe even like with it within the paddock, or maybe within the driving community, folks maybe tend to look at 6 championships, or even, you know, if you're looking at 1 championship versus 1 500, and you know, someone, you know, say you had a driver A and driver B that had achieved one and the other, And I've heard that folks have generally said that a championship is maybe looked upon with more admiration because you guys know just how much it takes to put together weekend after weekend, both from a driver standpoint and from an entire team. Whereas a 500, in some ways, as you said, and so many folks have said, that the track really does in lots of ways kind of pick the driver. I mean, we saw someone like Alexander Rossi as a rookie win in 2016. And obviously Alex has turned into a really incredible IndyCar driver. But at the time, I don't know that he was really on too many folks' radar. And he won the race in a, I don't know if you want to call it a fluky way, but he won on a fuel strategy gamble that paid off. You wouldn't maybe necessarily say that Alex had, say, the fastest car or maybe even the strongest car there all weekend, but or all month there at IMS. But it turned out that he and his team played their cards right. And when they went all in on that strategy, it worked out for them that day. So I think it's a really interesting idea. And I think it, in lots of ways, maybe more than anything, shows just how much you guys, both you guys and I guess maybe the fans and series at large, really look up to this, you know, the Indy 500, and just how special being someone whose face is on that BorgWarner trophy is in the grand scheme of racing. I think it's a really interesting debate. I don't know that there's a right answer, but it does seem like, as you described, I think a lot of folks in the series feel that way. And I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's a right or a wrong. Frankly, if I was choosing between both, that's a pretty mega thing to have to choose between. If someone yeah. said to you, here's option A, it's option B, I'd be like, oh my God, thanks. You know, like either would be great. You know, I'm not entirely sure that there's a bad option there, but
no.
I think people just understand. And the more times you go to the speedway, the significance of it, the gravitas of the event, what it means to the motorsport world, what it means to a community outside of the motorsport world. I mean, one of the coolest things, I know you didn't ask this, but I'm going to tell you anyway, because I think it's a fun story. One of the coolest things that I've seen at IMS was one of the years I watched the race from the spotter stand in turn three, and I saw Rick Mears walking up the spotter stand, up to the spotter stand, should I say, and everybody in that surrounding area got up and clapped him from the moment they saw him to the moment he got to the spotter stand. And I just remember thinking, that's a legend right there. And like, you wouldn't have even have necessarily had to have known that it was Rick Mears to understand how important that guy was to that fan group, you know, to that community of, you know, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And then you realize who he is, what he's achieved. And honestly, that's Elio now, you know, when he goes to the speedway. And just it'd be so awesome, you know, to experience that.
I think it's a great point. I mean, we'll just use Rick for an example. I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly how many championships he's won, but whatever the number is, we don't necessarily talk about Rick in terms of how many championships he's won. And I just pulled it up. It's three. So we don't talk about Rick really in terms of, you know, he's a three-time series champion. We talk about Rick because he's, among other things, a four-time Indy 500 champion. I think you look at someone like Dario Franchitti, who's won four championships, something that only five drivers in the history of the series have ever done. And we talk about Dario more than anything because he's a three-time 500 winner, not necessarily because of the four championships that he won in a pretty incredible streak from 2007 to 2011. So, really great question there. I want to give props to Jason Wade that sent that in. We have another one here from Joseph Hall, who asks, Jack, on your qualifying run where the tire malfunctioned, who made the decision to continue on with the run? Was it you or Mike? Regardless, he says it took a lot of, we'll say he used the nut, peanut emoji to continue, in my opinion.
That's a difficult one to answer. looking back, we've chatted about it. There's no doubt that we should have pit. My point to the team was, I'm probably not going to pit myself at the Indy 500 qualifying. Because if they only run, if you only get one run, you know, because of weather or something like that, you have to have completed it.
That's a great point.
And the reality is, we knew we were going to go back out. I mean, we had to, and the weather looked good, you know. So in that moment, I would have expected the team, because I radioed them in and said vibrations. And the thing is, from inside the car, you know, I feel the vibration, but when I've seen videos of the car after the run, you know, it sounded like something was wrong. And you know, I said to them, like, hey, like, if I radio you and say I've got vibrations and you see it, like, you at least need to tell me how bad they are. And I didn't want, I mean, I appreciate people telling me that we've got big peanuts, I guess. I don't think we should have put ourselves in that situation to show everybody that, you know, the size of them in the first place. So a lot of nice things got said after, just for car control and things like that. But you know, when I really look back on the month, I look at that as a moment where we risked more than what we needed to risk, and if we were to do it again, we definitely would pit early and fix that issue and try and have gone out. Because the knock-on effect of that really sucked is, when we did go out to actually do our qualifying run, I mean, we were pretty competitive at the heat of the day. The problem was, now it was the heat of the day, you know. So, and if we could have got out sooner before that came, then, you know, perhaps we would have been a little bit stronger again. So lessons have been learned.
I hadn't even thought about the weather aspect of it, but that's a really good point. I mean, I don't think, if I remember that day, that there were necessarily any weather concerns looming, but when it comes down to Indiana in the heat of May, when you've got high temperatures, there's always a chance that you could have a pop-up thunderstorm. And if something like that happens, and, you know, maybe another car or two crashes or has a malfunction similar to yours for whatever reason, and your time ends up actually being within the field of 33, and then, you know, say the rest of the day gets rained out, I imagine it makes a, certainly could make a big difference in, you know, being in the field going into Sunday already and not having to fiddle around with the last chance qualifier versus, you know, having not even necessarily put a time down. It's such a tough position. You know, I can't imagine having to make that decision like you guys would have to on the fly like that. But I think that's really good perspective to kind of get a little bit of insight into all of that. And with that,
well, I think as well, the only thing I would add to that is, you know, bump day, like, no one is safe from bump day.
Nope.
You know, like, watching Will Power in the last chance qualifier was, firstly, it's probably the best qualifier in IndyCar history. He's certainly in the top three. And now he's trying to just, like, fight to even be there. It was just crazy, you know, to me. And, you know, even Sage Karam, look at where he started. But I mean, look where he finished. You know, he had an awesome day. You know, and I think Jaron Rollerbolt had one of the standout performances of the day. Yet they were battling to even just make the race. And that's why I said to the team after, like, on that day, there was no weather, but I actually feel like IMS has its own, like, mini microclimate, because there's days when it's raining all around and doesn't seem to hit the track. And we love them days. And there's days where it seems like there's no rain and then suddenly it pops up for moisture.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely not easy to make in the moment. You know, I think a lot of racing in that way is, you know, not making decisions on the fly, but actually having spoke about them and go, hey guys, if we have this problem, here's a contingency plan. And I think that was the main takeaway from our 500 qualifying this year.
Great point. Yeah. I mean, you bring up someone like Will, who, I mean, he's, you know, if he makes even slightly more contact with the wall there, he probably Oof. Spins. And I mean, I guess you assume that someone like Team Penske probably has a backup car ready, you know, ready to go for him to try and make another attempt. But that's just not something that you want to be messing around with, even having a chance to go wrong. And that was very, very, very close to happening. So it's just a testament to what it takes to make this race and how special it is, kind of going back to a couple of conversations that we've already had today about the 500. And with that, we will wrap up this week's edition of IndyCar Weekly. Thanks for those of you, Joseph Hall and Jason Wade, that submitted questions. And we hope to get more from you folks this week. We will have two races to recap next week. So that means double the opportunities to send in some questions and double the races for us to break down. So thanks as always to Jack for jumping on with us. And we wish you best of luck here going into Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of IndyCar Weekly. We'll be back next week with an episode breaking down the Detroit Grand Prix doubleheader, along with a preview to the race at Road America around Elkhart Lake. Thanks, folks.